And so we said, but what is he saying? And then he explained that when he was young, he used to work as a ice cream seller. But when he came to the no-go zones, in LA with the little kids, dangerous zone, the little kids were only thinking to take his money. So he said, that's why I developed my scary, my mean look, like the little moustache.
Hidely ho, Sparksarinos. Welcome to episode 41 of All You Ever Think About Is Sparks, still the only and therefore best podcast solely devoted to the musical career of Ron and Russell Mail, a.k.a. Sparks. I do need to add an asterisk after that long-running claim of mine, however. Although this may still be the only audio podcast devoted to Sparks, there are at least two YouTube series, at least, you must check out if you haven't done so already. One, of course, is Monty Mallon's Sparks Art and Entertainment, and the other is Paul Barrett's Meta Sparks. I've said it before, but I can't recommend them enough to you guys, and they're going to have cool insights and cool ideas and cool guests that you just won't find here. Yet. This episode, I'm joined by the lovely and talented John Ashdown, UK-based dance music producer and all-around cool gent. John's best-known musical outfit is Christ on a Bike, and he has new music out, in fact. As a personal bonus, John's even entrusted me with remixing one of his new tracks. We'll see how that goes. For this ep, we're going to flip a few pages of the calendar back a bit to 1981 and finally get down and dirty with the immortal collaboration between Sparks and Belgian techno-pop group Telex, the album Sex. Better known by the Queen Victoria-approved title Birds and Bees, Telex's third album was the only time in the Belgian group where they really collaborated with outsiders. And even then, it seems that Sparks's input was limited to Ron's lyrical contributions. Every song on the album Sex features original lyrics by Ron Mail, and the result is a very Sparksian-sounding creation. In fact, I can't help but think of what could have been if they had just swapped all of Terminal Jive, minus When I'm With You, naturally, out for this album, note for note, and then simply replace Michelle Moore's French accent English singing for Russell's American vocals, and then slap the name Sparks on the LP, called it a day. But, of course, this isn't really a Sparks album. It's Telex's music with a Ron Mail point of view. But you can tell the collaboration had a focusing effect on the Belgian trio. Telex's songs never sounded quite as catchy or assured or as fully formed as they do on Sex. But I'm going to let past Christian and past John take it from there. This is going to be another two-parter, not a four-parter, relax. After this short series, Monty joins me once again as we finally delve into Sparks' 1983 album In Outer Space, which, by the way, was recorded in the very same studio in Brussels as Sex / Birds and Bees. And now, dance, goddammit! Let me start this intro off with a disclaimer. I had a hell of a time finding much content about Telex in general, let alone their 1981 album Sex, which was the only time Telex and Sparks really collaborated on a project. Part of the problem I encountered when sifting for Telex content is my complete ignorance of the French language. The vast majority of interviews or biographies I managed to unearth weren't in English, and I just don't have the ambition to try to translate audio from French to English, even with the magic of the modern internet. Apologies to my francophone listeners. So, I had to lean heavily on a very small handful of sources, mainly an episode of Martin Ware's excellent podcast, Electronically Yours, an English translated version of the late Marc Moulin's website, Telex synth wizard Dan Laxman's website, and a couple of recent English language interviews with Laxman and Telex singer Michelle Moores. It's interesting. Hearing the guys in Telex talk about the kind of music that they set out to make and the image they wanted to portray, there's a lot of overlap between where they were coming from and where Sparks were coming from. The aesthetic approach of both groups was similar, as well as their shared emphasis on humor. Combine that with the lifelong friendship forged between Ron Mayall and Mark Moulin, who sadly passed away from throat cancer in 2008 at the age of 66. It's a bit odd that their paths so rarely crossed again after the early 80s. Telex, at their best, ticked many of the same boxes as Sparks. They were playful, arch, ironic. Their music often juxtaposed the sexy rhythms and sounds of dance music. Their lyrics were far from sexy, especially when they were singing about sex. They enjoyed subverting the form of pop music and subverting expectations of what a pop song and a pop group should look and sound like. They were also immensely talented musicians, particularly keyboardist Moulin, who enjoyed a career in contemporary jazz music both before and after his time with Telex. But outside their native Belgium, and to a lesser extent the better part of Western Europe, Telex never enjoyed the level of international recognition Sparks has enjoyed over the years. And that lack of sustained attention to their career seems in part by design, in retrospect. Telex managed to turn heads and even get bodies on the dance floor for a brief moment in the early 80s. But as the individual members will tell you, Telex was more of a shared project among the three Belgians rather than the focus of their professional lives. Telex only ever released five albums. Actually, scratch that. They did come back after an extended hiatus, and they released a sixth album of covers in 2006. The first five albums in their first run all came out between 1979 and 1988, and the first three of those were all recorded before 1982. During most of their careers, they kept holding down their day jobs, in a sense. Dan Laxman started his career in the early 70s as a music producer and engineer, jobs he maintains to this day. Mark Moulin's career in jazz resumed after Telex faded as an active enterprise in the late 80s, and he remained active until his untimely death. Michelle Moores was and is a journeyman singer, musician, and sometimes producer. There was a vast amount of talent on display with Telex, much more so than with many other early electronic pop acts. Phil Oakey of the Human League once bragged that he was more punk than punk bands of the day because while they would play only three chords, he would only use one finger. The same could be said of Laxman or Moulin on a number of early Telex tracks. However, while Oakey was hitting one key on his synth at a time because he lacked the training to do more, Telex only ever did the same because of a strict sense of discipline. Moulin, in particular, was a keyboard maestro. Their songs were catchy and danceable, too. Their marriage of the brutally precise beats and melodies of Kraftwerk with the playfulness of Europop and disco caught listeners off guard when their first hit single, Moscow Disco, came out in 1979. Inspired in large part by Kraftwerk's Trans-Europe Express, Moscow Disco was a minor dance floor hit. The rhythm track to the song in particular impressed Kraftwerk themselves, since while the German techno-poppers had settled for hacking early drum machines to get their percussive sounds, Telex built their beats from scratch on Dan Laxman's Moog Modular, an impressive feat. But like the dog that finally catches the car, Telex wasn't sure what to do once they started to get traction. They were never keen on performing in public and seemed almost totally uninterested in pop stardom. In fact, one of the defining moments of Telex's career was their reluctant appearance on TV as part of the 1980 Eurovision contest. Telex's manager was adamant about the group performing on the program and entering the contest, with the conviction that their participation would increase the band's profile and help to sell records. As it would happen, their turn on Eurovision served both of those purposes. Although to an outside observer, Telex seemed to do everything they could to prevent such an outcome. the music they were making in those early years simply wasn't built to play live. And besides that, they all felt like they were already too old and ordinary looking to pass for pop stars. Although Telex eventually gave in to their manager's insistence, what transpired on Dutch television the day of their Eurovision performance was one of the more legendary piss takes in pop music history. The song they wrote for the contest was almost embarrassingly simplistic, with postmodernist lyrics that were as banal as they felt the contest was itself. "Celebrities are worried," sings Michel Moores in French. "They wear makeup, smoke a cigarette before you go into the hot seat. Eurovision, Eurovision, Eurovision." Of course, he pronounced Eurovision in the French, Eurovision. Please pardon my French. Literally. On stage, they mimed their instruments and lip-synced the words just as they had been instructed to, just as all the other acts did. But instead of giving a performance, they gave more of an anti-performance. The bearded and bespectacled Moores, dressed like a dour schoolmaster, made minimalism look busy. A simple flip of a palm from down to up would punctuate the end of a verse. The climax of his choreographed routine was the reveal of the left inner part of Moores' scarf, followed by the right. Moores was flanked on either side by Laxman and Moulin, who only seemed to pantomime their own pantomime. Moulin, for his part, was playing silent jazz chords on the keyboard of his monophonic synthesizer, a disaccord that was likely noticed only by other synth players who happened to be tuned into the TV that day. The aversion to the limelight is probably the deepest difference between Telex and Sparks. Ron Mayles' sedentary, scowling aside, Sparks wanted fame. They courted it, even though they consistently held fast to their creative vision, which they understood and accepted might not be the stuff of stadium superstardom and millions of record sales. But Telex was much more enthusiastic in their lack of enthusiasm to play the pop game. They just wanted to make good records with fun new toys and to smirk at their audience from the comfort and safety of a dark and padded studio. And why was that exactly? Why did these three pop musicians seem so uninterested in being pop stars? Moores and Laxman give us some clues in their 85-minute sit-down in 2021 with Martin Ware of Human League and Heaven 17 fame. I'm not going to do this one with the accent, by the way. "Belgium has been the center of war," Laxman explained to Ware. "This means everybody came through us. Romans, Germans, French, Spanish, Hollanders. We are maybe the less proud people in the world." When asked by Ware where Telex's humor came from, Laxman offered, "Either you make suicide or you have some kind of humor to navigate, you know." Laxman's invocation of Belgium's long history of subjugation to hostile foreign powers, most infamously, of course, by the Nazis, which was not much more than a decade before the birth of the members of Telex. It all points to a learned response among Belgians over the years of preferring to remain inconspicuous, a bit like the earliest mammals in the millennia following the demise of the dinosaurs, as if doing your best not to stand out from the crowd was the result of shared trauma across an entire nation and was something that you did to survive. Even when Ron and Russell flew to Telex's Sin Sound Studios in 1981 to collaborate on the Sex album, Moores and Laxman described their time with Sparks as like being on the set of a talk show. Both Ron and Russ seemed larger than life in their presence. Laxman recalled the atmosphere being somewhat tense with the brash Americans in their quiet studio space. But the mood changed after one memorable moment. On one occasion, Ron ran over to the nearest window in the studio when he heard a melodic chime coming from outside, thinking it must be an ice cream van. As Laxman told Music Radar in 2021, Ron stood up, walked to the window, and said, "They're calling me, they're calling me." We thought to ourselves, what's he doing? It was a relief when he explained that when he was young, he worked as an ice cream guy, but was afraid to visit certain no-go places in Los Angeles where the little kids were always trying to steal his money. That's why he developed that mean face and little mustache. We thought that story was funny, and from then on, it was very relaxed in the studio. And there you have your Ron Mayall mustache origin story. Never chart toppers themselves, Telex's influence can nonetheless be heard in everything from 80s Detroit techno to Billie Jean. Yeah, seriously, Laxman swears that the chord progression in Billie Jean is exactly the same as Moscow Disco's. And Michael Jackson once told an interviewer in the early 80s that he was struck with inspiration after hearing a song he once heard on the radio by a European techno-pop group. Telex reformed after a long hiatus to record a new album of covers in 2006. 2 years later, on September 26 of 2008, Marc Moulon succumbed to his cancer diagnosis, which effectively put an end to Telex as a working concern. Musicians from all over the world and across multiple genres paid their respects to Moulon in a tribute show in 2013. I have more on that if you go back and listen to the beginning of episode 28, our Terminal Jive episode. In recent years, surviving members Moores and Laxman signed with Mute Records to release remixed and remastered versions of most of Telex's discography. Oh, and that final pseudo-Telex Sparks collab? Well, it's really a Marc Moulon solo track called What? And while it's a nice bit of hip-hop-inspired jazz pop, the only real Sparks-flavored input is a clip of a faux-bewildered Ron Mayall intermittently asking, "What in the hell?" Go figure. Once again, I want to thank John Ashdown for joining me for this conversation. Now, let's get brainwashed.
What the hell is going on?
Hey, John.
Hello there, Christian. How are you?
Doing fantastic. It's good to talk to you face to face, more or less.
Yeah, I guess so.
So we're here today to talk about, and I mentioned this on a previous episode of this podcast that I do, this album by Telex. And Telex, of course, as you know, is a Belgian synth pop band. They got their start around the same time as Yellow Magic Orchestra, perhaps maybe just a little bit ahead of Human League. You might know better than I. I wanted to ask you before we get into this album, if you were familiar with Telex, A, and B, if you were familiar with this album around the time that it came out.
Definitely. I remember hearing Rock Around the Clock, which was their first release, at least in the UK, and that was a hit single. I think that was 1978/79. And then they didn't have much after that. I think there was Saint-Tropez, which was another release after that, and then Disco Moscow.
Well, that was huge, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was more a dance floor hit. Certainly in the UK, it didn't do very much. But then the album that really got me was Neurovision, which was released in 1980 by pure, I don't know whether they meant to do it, but pure fluke, they reckon. They actually won the Belgian entry for the Eurovision Song Contest, right? Which means you guys, you know, in the States, you don't really
get. Of course, that means nothing to us. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's weird now in that you've got people like Israel and even more weird, Australia in the Eurovision Song Contest.
Right.
How the hell does that happen? In any case, that second album, when they put the single out of Eurovision just before the competition, I heard it, immediately went out and bought it, and I thought, this is brilliant, because it literally was pastiching, really, in a way, taking the pee out of the Eurovision Song Contest, and yet it was the Belgian entry.
And that album is really, really good. It's their best album. I know I should be more buying towards the Sparks related one, but it is their best album in my opinion. And it's got some fantastic tracks on there. Even better than the Eurovision song, which actually was really good. And yet, their intention was to come last. They
Right,
said if
right.
they didn't win it, which they said,
I understood that.
no
Yeah.
chance, they wouldn't have come
From
last.
what I read, Portugal rated them. I can't recall.
Portugal gave them 10 points,
Portugal gave them points,
it
so they
really
didn't come
didn't.
in last.
Yes.
So they, which and you know, and as you said, you know, the lyrics in the song were completely taking the piss out of the entire proceedings.
The whole
And
idea was to throw it into a light to say, well, yeah, it's all about open borders, but really it isn't, is it? We're still a little bit stuck with what's gone on in the past,
right.
but nonetheless, it was a really, really good tune. And the guy who won from Ireland actually said their song should have won. He said, if I don't win it, you should. And they said, there's no chance of that. Didn't think
That's
they would
great.
win it. But yeah, and then on to the Birds and Bees stroke Sex album. I wasn't aware that it had been released in 81 because it didn't get released until 1982 here.
Right.
And it was retitled as Birds and the Beast because they
Right.
thought calling it Sex was a little bit too over the top
A
for.
little tour of that. Which, by the way, I think it this merits in some sort of aside. That the only territory where they renamed it Birds and Bees was in the UK. I would think if anywhere it would be in the US, but there it was, and so that came out a year or so after the original release of Sex.
That's right, 82. They released the first single was Haven't We Met Somewhere Before, which is brilliant. And it's, to me, that is a Spark song. It sounds like a Spark song. I mean, you could literally have had that directly after what they did with Giorgio Moroder, and that would have followed on nicely. And it's a really, really good song. And then came Toujours, L'amour toujours, which isn't on the other versions of the album, other than the UK version. And in
And
fact,
then
it reappeared on the next album that they did for some reason.
Yeah, it's this is it's a hard album to get your hands around, because it went through so many permutations on the outset, you know, and then on subsequent re-releases, and then many, many years later on remasters and remixes and that kind of thing. And we might get into that. So you did, when it was released in the UK as Birds and Bees, was that something that you were aware of and you picked up on when it came out?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I had the single, which I can show you, but yes.
Here we go.
Yeah, here we go.
This is why this has to be on YouTube from now on.
I know. That's the single, the 12-inch single. That's Haven't We Met Somewhere Before? The
Haven't we met
piece.
somewhere before? Beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Cool. Yeah, no, and the dummy and the B side is Dummy and Exercise is Good for You. Then the next single was, as I say, was L'amour toujours. Then they released Birds and Bees. I didn't know anything about an original version, about an 81 version. So over here in the UK, that's what we thought was the album released in that year.
Was there much, I mean, of an awareness of Telex? I know there was an awareness of Sparks, you know, obviously from 1974 and so on with the Island Records. Was there much of an awareness of Telex in 1982 of Telex?
Probably a little bit later, no, but after they'd released Moscow Disco, that was a popular song played in Blitz in the club where you had the original members of Visage, for instance, where it was really, really famous sort of club where the majority of your sort of new romantics developed from in London. And you had Boy George was there he used to run the, he was part of the Door or something or other.
Wow.
I think, or no, he was the he was the cloakroom attendant.
Was he?
Yeah, he was there. Yeah. And so you had.
I wonder how many cloaks he stole.
Yeah, so Telex was known then, but by 1982, I think they'd faded from popular knowledge of them. So this was a little bit of a comeback, but it didn't really chart as far as I remember, either the singles or the album.
I just wanted to, I looked into it because I was asking the same question. How did this album chart? And I couldn't come up with any good information there. But I wanted to give just a little bit of background into as to how this came to be, because I was very curious myself. and I'm sure you've heard about Leo. There's a
yes, Lilo. Lilo. Lilo.
Lilo?
Lilo, Lilo.
Oh,
she was the artist that had a massive hit.
I can't misspell.
Yeah, she was. She had a massive hit in France, and it was. She wanted to work with the Mail Brothers, and she had them do some songs for an album, and then she wanted to do a whole album with them, and that's how they got introduced to the Mail Brothers by Lilo in Paris. They were introduced, I think, to Mark and to Dan Laxman, who were there. And then this is where the invitation came to do an album with Lilo at Sin Sound in Brussels, the Telex Studios at the time.
So it was by way, my understanding, by way of Lilo, the Mail Brothers got to meet the Telex guys in Belgium.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's how that went. Okay,
yeah, they met them in Paris, and the talk was about doing the second Lilo album at the time, and they were then met up or met was meant to meet up with Lilo in Brussels, but she didn't turn up.
Yeah, you and I heard the same podcast episode of
Martin Ware.
Martin Ware, yes, thank you. Yeah, Martin Ware of the original incarnation of the Human League and Heaven 17, and he did make mention of that. I guess she was, according to Dan Laxman, she was burned out. Whatever.
Yeah, a little bit fly by night, as we would say.
She
pulled a bit away with the fairies.
Right. Yeah. Well, you're allowed to be at that age. So, I mean, I guess then I put it at around the time the Mail Brothers were recording with Marauder, Terminal Jive, perhaps.
Yeah, it would have been just after that. So they met up in 1981.
Right.
But they met Lilo, and she introduced them to Telex in 1980. So I'm assuming they were around, possibly going back and forth doing work with on Terminal Jive.
Yeah.
But this sort of meetup that was meant to happen with writing lyrics for an English version of an album for Lilo just didn't happen, and they were there. And Alex said, well, let's go ahead and do something that with us, because they were part of the way through doing Sex, Stroke, Birds and Bees at the time.
Right. So I'm guessing that the music was pretty much composed before Russell
From what I've read, and again, it's all conversation, some of the interviews that have come is that, yes, a lot of the music was already sort of underway, and it was the lyrics that they were having that they were troubled with, because apparently Michael, the lead singer, wasn't wasn't great at producing lyrics, and what they wanted was a French and English version, which right. is exactly what they've done. Neurovision, if you hear it, there are two versions of it, you know, right. rather like Bowie did Heroes in English, French and German. And that's pretty difficult for someone who has no real grasp of it. But thankfully, you had Russell, who was apparently fluent in French, and therefore I assume could write it down as well as speak it. Yeah. So that must have really helped. And at the same time, they were able to coach Michael with his phrasing and his singing in terms of the English parts. I would have assumed I wouldn't have thought he'd learn how to sing in French.
Yeah, I would be so curious to know if there were any prospective lyrics, you know, there on hand before Ron and Russell got there, because when you hear the songs, first of all, you know, when you if you've gotten yourself immersed in a little bit of Telex, then it sounds like Telex, but when you hear Michelle sing those lyrics, it sounds like a Spark song. It sounds like Ron Mayall.
Yeah, I think you're correct, and many of the songs actually do sound like Spark songs. So whether there was any influence in what they were doing at the time, I mean, there's no credit that I understand for any music being written by the Mayall brothers, but
no, I don't think so.
Yeah, but you know, it does sort of it does almost sound like it could have been something like a cross between the middle bit of Womp and Angst, which was around at the time. I mean, they were doing Angst at the time, not long after anyway.
Yeah, I've been listening to this album, well, of course, you know, in preparation for this, over and over for the last week or so. And I can't help but think that it often sounds like the album that I wish Terminal Jive could have been.
Possible,
I mean, Ron is definitely on his game lyrically, and perhaps with some help from Russell. We never know. That sort of thing is kind of opaque often. Just the pops. Sensibility of these guys is just so on in this record.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think they
and I guess that's all them. That's all Telex. That's all Dan and Mark and Michelle.
Yeah, they write from the point of view of it's pop, but often they meander into bits of jazz because that's their background.
Right.
And you get that sort of that left field type of songs every now and again. They're a little bit different from the norm, but there's a pop sensibility, no doubt about it, right the way through. Yeah. You only have to, you know, listen to many of the earlier songs that they did, particularly on Neurovision. And this one, admittedly, I'm going to mention the songs that the Mayalls weren't involved in, but if you listen to Mata Hari, which is on the English LP, but not on the Everywhere Else Worldwide LP, it's brilliant. And it was a single as well. It's really, really good.
Was that a single?
I think it was. I think it was
Matahari?
A single. Of all places, it was a single in Germany. I'm sure of it. It's hilarious.
There's a lot of irony there.
The storyline. Actually, if you listen to the song, it's actually not about Mata Hari. It's about someone who's like Mata Hari, who lies constantly, who tells stories and is viewed as being like that, which is again very Ron Mayall.
It's very Ron Mayall. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that. I'm glad you brought that up. When this album was re-released, when they signed to Mute, Mute re-released this record. And I know they included, we'll get to this later, but they included the song Dummy, which I think was just a B-side earlier in 1981. I don't know if they included Mata Hari, but I know that they should have. And I think that there were some releases of Sex, Stroke, Birds and Bees that included it. But when I first heard it, which I was not long ago, a couple of weeks, it sounded so much like a Sparks song that I thought it belonged completely. In fact, I couldn't help but think about a recent Sparks song. Oh gosh, was it? Just came out on the last. What was it? On the last album, Veronica Lake. It reminded me of Veronica Lake, in the sense that it was referring to this beautiful historical, figure, but also not just her.
Yeah,
it could have been someone who's like her in some ways.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah, that was really cool. Do you mind if we go through the album like track by track? Is that something that we can?
Yeah, definitely. I know that's the procedure with Monty. So
it's the procedure we got with Monty.
I have to put my Monty hat on. So
okay, all right, put the Monty hat on.
I don't have the right beard and everything, but we can carry on.
You should have. Well, all right. Well, next time you grow the Monty beard, you got to see it. All right. Yeah, we kind of discussed this a little bit. I'm leaning on sort of our main text being the original release of the Sex album, and so that would be what they released in 1981 in the U.S. and Benelux and other places. However, as I said, I also really really want to talk about specifically after that, Dummy and Mata Hari. And then if you have anything that you want to say about the other songs that were released on the 1982 version. And by the way, I've got to step aside for a moment. So when that was released, the 1982 version, I mean, they tacked on so many songs. That had to have been a double LP at least.
Yeah, I never saw that. Obviously, I only bought the single LP, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. The double never got released in the UK. If it did,
okay.
I never saw it.
Yeah, because, here I am with my 2024 technology trying to pull up the entire double album as it was released, and I could only pull up a handful of the tracks from that. So I was curious.
Yeah, I've got a version that I download that has, I think it's 21. Songs.
Oh, okay.
And that is, I think, the full list of what was then released around the time, I think maybe 2008, there was a re-release of the whole thing. Yeah.
Okay.
It was re-released again. So that might be the reason why Mute hasn't put everything on there, because it's been put out previously, and this is just what they selected.
Right.
Expects to go out for each of the albums.
Yeah, my understanding after listening to that interview with Martin Ware is that they're being very selective about what they're re-releasing and remastering. And this is a telex, and this is a process that they've been doing over the last 3 years or so. So maybe that stuff hasn't, just been out there recently.
Yeah, I mean, the six box CD is out.
Yeah.
And the vinyl, so it's there, but from what I understand, it doesn't necessarily have everything on it. So it may be that they've been selective about particular songs in the remastering.
I'm reading right here from Discogs that the album was recorded from December 80 to May 81, mixed August 81 at the Sin Sound Studio, Brussels, Belgium. So that would maybe even be a little bit after Terminal Jive by a month or so.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think it was probably around the time that they were going back and forth with Womp at the time.
Yeah. Can I get into the, before we get into the songs, can I talk about the album artwork? Because it's really cool. And when I first saw the album artwork to Sex, and you have it right there, it looks like. There it is. Yep. Raise it up because I don't have it. Oh, that's fantastic. That butterfly is great, and yeah, and it's so evocative of, like, youthful innocence, and then this, that's wonderful.
Yeah, but the 81 versions, the non-UK ones, actually really show what it was meant to be about, sex. Whereas, the version that we've got here is just meaningless in a way. A butterfly next to a flower. Yeah, okay.
So I thought that was the original.
Yeah, I mean the 81 one I think is a bit better. This is larger than the version that I've seen that many that are out in 81. But I'd have thought there'd have been a bit more obvious about, if they called it sex, why not have something a little bit more obvious? And it was
Kind
quite
of a,
toned down too.
or if they're going for the irony
Yeah,
that, this is not what.
pollination.
Well, there it is, right?
There it is.
Getting in, and that's sort of a male thing or a Ron male thing, just, getting down to the very basics to the extent that it's no longer sexy.
The one thing is interesting about the UK release is that there's no lyric sheet,
Is that right?
which you did get with Neurovision, and that on the English version. So I'm a bit, bemused by why when they bring in the Mel Brothers to do English lyrics to make it sound right and come out in a proper English style for English speaking people, not necessarily the UK. They don't put a lyric sheet in.
That is really peculiar.
Yeah, I mean, it maybe save costs
That's
the label.
usually the safest bet. Asterisk, that the album artwork was done by a Belgian named Rudy Latoie. I tried to look up anything else that he had done, and he's done a lot of other album artwork, but from artists that I hadn't seen before. But what I really liked about seeing that image for the first time is that it, like, things that I was used to seeing from electronic artists from like 15 or so years later, like Future Sound of London or something. It was this blown out, almost digital looking, but it probably wasn't, image of nature stuff,
I know what you mean because in the early 90s, you got a lot of computerized graphics used for videos because it was nice to sort of show this sort of druggy, spaced out look on most of the techno stroke. Acid house type songs, and you've got people, as you mentioned, Future Sound of London, Prodigy did it. Quite a number of people had those sort of video images.
Totally. All right, well, let's get into it.
Okay.
So the album starts off, I guess, in all versions with Brainwash.
No, it doesn't, but
No, it
carry on.
doesn't. Oh, you got me. This is why I don't do this alone anymore.
Yeah, right. No, but carry on because we're talking about your version. We'll get to
Well,
my
okay,
version
sure,
later.
fine, why not? Okay, so the US version, and from what I understand, the Benelux version begins with Brainwash,
That's correct.
which has this really great stuttering bass line. Fantastic groove that I cannot believe was not done with a sequencer, but apparently it wasn't.
And I think they talked about the fact that when they first started out, they didn't have a sequencer, so they were literally putting bits of tape or whatever it is that they managed to program bass and drum lines too. So interesting. Because I know from the interview, I think it was one of the electronic magazine ones interviews. They were talking about which particular synthesizers they started out with, and they could afford a little bit more, which is Martin Weir picked them up on this, saying, "Oh, well, you have more money than me," type thing. But
I heard that.
But I mean, they made their money out of the royalties they got from one of the songs that was a big hit called Coconut.
Oh yeah, sure.
It was,
which is sort of their twist on popcorn.
That's right, popcorn hot butter.
Yeah,
a massive 1972 hit.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was fantastic. Yeah, I heard about that. So they got a lot of royalties from that then. And
yeah, apparently that's what got them into buying newer synths to work with. Write it down. They started off with, yeah, that's right. That it was Dan Laxman who went out as Polyphonic Synth. And okay. He had a big
oh,
hit.
Yes.
And he was using...
Yeah, he got a Moog Poly.
That's it.
He bought a Poly Moog.
Yep, that's it. And then they moved on to... yes, because they started out with a VC-S3, see?
Right.
That's what they started with. And then they moved on to a modular Moog. And then they had one of the first vocoders.
They had a what now?
Vocoder.
They had a vocoder. Yeah, vocoders. Right. You know, they make use of that vocoder a lot.
In
this album to good effect. I would argue, and yeah, one of the biggest questions that I had, and I haven't had this answered yet, and I don't know if I will until I'm able to actually talk to someone who was involved. And the recording of this is what the gear was they were using on this particular album, because I know that Dan Laxman started off, with that early modular stuff, and I, of course, the vocoders are in there. So I'm not sure what they were using here, except that I am fairly certain they still didn't have a sequencer. But I again, from the same podcast episode that we listened to, they made all of the rhythm sounds from scratch from a drum synth.
Yeah,
which is amazing. And in some ways, it's kind of the opposite of what Sparks did with Giorgio Moroder in Number One in Heaven, where on that album. They had precisely timed, you know, all the synth stuff, the 16th notes to eighth notes and whatever. But they just couldn't or didn't feel comfortable enough, I guess, with a synth rhythm that would be good enough. So they got a human drummer. Now with this album, Sex, all of that rhythm stuff is all synth.
Yeah, it must have taken them so long to program.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, that must have been the majority of what they were spending their time on, just getting those tracks together.
Yeah.
To put that bass, the bass lines down, along with the drum track and programming that was needed is really, really fantastic to think about how long they must have spent just doing all of that. And we're not talking about a Kraftwerk thing where, yeah, at the time, Kraftwerk were doing an album every 18 months at the time before they stopped. But they were doing a hell of a lot of tracks. Specifically just doing one song for a month. It was quite a lot of songs that they actually produced at that time. Hence the leftover songs that are added onto the CD versions.
Did you get any sort of sense as to who was doing what within Telex?
The only thing that it sounds like is that Michael Stroke Michel didn't do much in terms of playing any instrument other than doing the singing. Now, I don't know if that's fair to say, but it sounds like it. Dan Laxman is always put down as the programmer. So I'm guessing that he did most of the background, but then he also mentions that Mark Mulderman, who's sadly no longer with us, did a lot of the actual rhythm tracks as well. So he must have done rhythm and melody in as much as Dan was probably the program man who just put all this together. And where necessary was doing a lot of the But the harder work in the background, well, the melody work was being done by Mark Moonan. I might be being unfair to Michel in, I don't know if he got involved in any of the instrumentation stuff.
I'm not sure to be honest. And of course, you know, we should say that Mark Moulin and Ron Mayall became fast friends around 1979 and remained that way all the way throughout their lives. I mean, I don't know if they fell out or in or whatever, but they were close friends, you know, for up until Mark Moulin's death, sadly, in 2008. So much so that there was a gathering in 2013, I think it was, in Belgium, where Sparks showed up and played a couple of Telex songs and gave a heartfelt, I don't know, whatever you might want to call it, thank you or something. Yes, to Mark Moulin for all the work that he did and all the friendship that they shared. So
yeah, I actually wondered if Ron was invited to the funeral, but I assume he didn't go. Thank you for reminding me about that because I'd forgotten. I must give a credit to Øystein Moe from Norway, who's given me a lot of help with, you know, pre-research. And I did ask Øystein if he knew whether Ron had gone to the funeral, if he had any clues on that. And he did the usual thing, ask Rude.
That's what everybody says. That's what everybody says in this whole goddamn community. Okay. True. Ask Rude. The guy has only so many hours in the day.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to get into the album and start with, we're going to start with Brainwash, right?
Go ahead. Yeah.
I love the groove.
Do you want to do the lyric beforehand or are you going to cut
that? Let's do it now. Absolutely. Could I invite you to?
Yeah, sure. I'll go ahead. You'll have to get it in pseudo Cockney voice. So
pseudo Cockney is pseudo just Cockney. Fine. I listened to a lot of David Bowie. He did
that's
pseudo Cockney.
The accent is so. Right. When do you want me to start?
Go ahead.
Count me in. Okay. Right. This is Brainwash. I was a brain, an egghead, overly sane. I was half dead. Then I saw you in Paris. And I said, my God, I've just been brainwashed. When I was smart and clever, read about Sartre, but you're better. When I hold you close to me, I lose all my memories. I'm happy. Brainwashed, brainwashed. Love did this to me, Professor. He was a real tough tester. You said goodbye, you'd call me. He was a real Svengali. I lost you, but you'll come back. I'll enroll in his course, How to Brainwash. Brainwashed, brainwashed, love did this to me. Now I'm a person, I've started cursing. Brainwash, brainwash, you did this to me. Brainwashed, brainwash, love did this to me.
I'm
doesn't take a whole lot of looking into. So you've got a very intellectual and smart and like book learned guy who falls in love with some woman he meets in Perry, and he realizes he's been brainwashed.
Yeah, that's it. And it's like, you know, the nerd gets the girlfriend, and then he gets beaten by an even bigger nerd who's much more able to you know, keep his lady in check, but more fascinated by him than this particular character who Ron has written about. And this is a theme that Ron comes up with every time, isn't it?
Oh yes,
it'd be having his girl stolen. You heard this on the last album with Instant Weight Loss.
Yeah,
and we'll come on to that with Exercise Is Good For You.
Oh yeah,
loads of time.
Oh my God, that I didn't. Thank you for putting. Okay, we'll get to that. That's.
Oh, I've got some loops on that one. Carry on.
Perfect. Well, I don't know if there's a whole lot more to say about that, but I was going to say it's a great way to start off the album, but of course that's not the way the album starts off with in every region. So it may be a little different, but again, that rumbling bass, that groove is a great way to start the tone of this album.
Yeah.
And I think it hints that it's that there is going to be a little funk. There's going to be a little disco. What is it? 1981. There may be a little post-punk. And I think we'll get to a lot of all that stuff. So the second song on there is
just before you move on, though, Chris, but just to mention that was a single, Brainwashed.
It was a single.
Yeah, and there is a special version of it somewhere. I haven't been able to get hold of it, but there is a version of it, a long version.
Yeah,
which so I'm assuming there was a 12-inch somewhere.
Yeah,
whatever countries it was in, and I'm pretty sure it was. But there's also another version that somebody has done, or a special version that was added on somewhere or other.
I remember reading that on at least one of the releases of Birds and Bees that there was a longer version of Brainwash on there. That I would like to find.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure if somebody's got it, and there'll be the devotees out there that have got the Brainwash single, whatever country they're in, and they've probably got the 12-inch and they're holding it in their crisp golden hands going, ooh, that might be worth a lot of money.
I know the three or four of you who write into me, come on, this is where I need you.
The people with every color of Beat the Clock, yeah.
Oh, no doubt. So the next song that we have is Drama, and in the sequence of the album version that I've been listening to, it just works so well, and I wish Drama was the single. What's your take on Drama before we get into the lyrics?
It's catchy, but it's obviously basically it's the anti. Excitement, you know, exciting life. It's
I think that's kind of what Telex and Sparks are both, or at least at that time, were both kind of about. One of the things that, and I think Dan Laxman may have said this, but what they wanted to do was to, I'm sorry, was to suck the fun out of rock and roll. And somehow make fun out of that.
Yeah, I was going to say that's typical Ron, though, isn't it? Because Ron writes about the mundane.
Right.
He writes about the normal life, and he then blows that up into a beautiful song about, you know, how extreme it could be, just the normality of that life.
Right, because I feel like what he's trying to do, and I feel like in a lot of ways what Michelle and the rest of them are trying to do is sort of cut through a lot of the bullshit so that they get to you and you, the listener, in your own experience. And I think that works well in a lot of ways in this album. And I think that this is one of those. And also, it's another one where it starts off with just a really cool groove.
Yeah, and that's what they're all about. Telex do that. That programming, that bass line, and the beat, the way that they work them together. Yeah.
Yeah, and again, just knowing that a lot of this was played by Marc Moulin without any sequencers or anything like that is all the more impressive, because he's got the beat and the rhythm absolutely down, I guess. So I'm going to go ahead and read the lyrics for Drama Drama, and then it's very run. There's the alarm. There's my left arm. Extraordinaire. Gotta get up. Coffee and cup. Extraordinaire. Medium toast. Time to blow nose. Extraordinaire. Shower and shave. My name is Dave. Extraordinaire. Drama, drama, drama. This sure ain't Broadway. I got a car. It always starts. Extraordinaire. I got a heart. It always beats. Extraordinaire. Drama, drama, drama. This sure ain't Broadway. And I can't read that because I can't read French.
What?
Can you?
I think it's c'est... Go on.
C'est épouvantable.
That'll do.
C'est épouvantable. I can't do it. I never...
Épouvantable.
Say it again.
It sounds like c'est épouvantable.
Épouvantable. This is what I get. I got a job, make a few bucks, extraordinaire. A weekend arrives, drink with the guys, extraordinaire. Drama, 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 this sure ain't Broadway. Say it again, John. Say it again. Épouvantable. As an actor, this is important. All right. I got a girl, she is a pearl, extraordinaire. She's not a snob. She's not a snob, extraordinaire. Her eyes are blue. What else is new? Extraordinaire. There it is. So, a lighthearted take on daily routines and mundane moments in everyday life that can be overlooked or taken for granted.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Boring, straightforward existence.
Yes, there it is. But drama, drama, drama. Does he want drama, drama, drama?
Yeah, it actually reminds me a little bit of, there's a Stranglers song called Norman Normal. It was a B-side of one of their singles, and it brilliantly says about that someone who is actually pretty normal is pretty abnormal in that they are extraordinaire. You just don't get that many people who are just that normal. And I think this song says it all. I mean, the line of "My name is Dave." It's just throwaway. And it's just
it is great. It
yeah.
There's a little window there into what's that song they did in about 1993? A Crime Prevention Week.
Oh, National Crime Awareness Week.
National Crime Awareness Week. Yeah,
that's one of my favorite songs.
Me too.
It's in the top ten for me.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, without that, you wouldn't have got gratuitous sex. There's no doubt about it.
You can
you like saying, you know, they would have got a record deal. Nah. If that single hadn't come out and got themselves popular again, and big thank you to Finny Tribe for that from Scotland.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, yes, yeah, no, they deserve tons of credit for that. But it's a window into that sort of mentality, sort of that guy from Psycho, like as you were kind of pointing at, he's so normal he can't be normal.
yeah,
and it's a fun song, and once again, I mean, you know, I hate to spend so much time on Ron's lyrics when the music is so evocative on its own.
Yeah, there's a definite groove, but I think you hit the nail on the head with pop sensibility. Yeah. So let's use that. The majority of their songs have a real groove, have a real melody line and a hook going on it. Many of these songs that probably weren't singles could have been singles, and they're just helped by the fact that Ron wrote the lyrics to them, or rhymes.
Yeah. I hear similarities to things that were going on contemporaneously, and there's sort of like a massive Venn diagram happening here. Like parts of this, and we'll get to a song very soon, sound like a Yellow Magic Orchestra. Where it's just sort of upbeat and it's and parts of it can sound like Fad Gadget.
Yes.
Where it's dark and sort of bleak, but then bass heavy, grr, grr, grr. And parts of it sound more like, you know, like Vince Clarke in the early 80s, where it's all about the melody.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree.
And a lot of that I think is here. So the next song we have is, I guess, what you would call the, from my understanding anyway, the big single from the album, which is "Haven't We Met Somewhere Before?"
Yeah, this song got played a lot, but there's a, I'm trying to remember the guy's name, the DJ. He used to DJ he'd do a DJ set before a lot of the old 80s bands would come on, like Blancmange. John Fox, I've seen him work for that. And this guy would play "Haven't We Met Somewhere Before?" And people would just stand there looking at each other going, "What's this? Who is this?"
And when?
And I can count the number of times somebody has turned to me, because I'm grooving away in the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
"Who is this, mate?" And I have to tell, you know, "Oh, it's Telex. It's that, you know, Haven't We Met Somewhere Before?" And I go, "Well, who are they?" And I said, "Well, this was written with Sparks." And then you get, "Who are they?
Right there." Oh, no. I got nowhere. No starting point.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it happens, and it's quite strange that it's that particular song that people are looking at each other. "Who the hell is this?" You know, they know all the others. They know the Visages and the Spandau Ballet and the Duran Durans and all this that might get played, and the Human League. But this came on, and they're looking around at each other.
Yeah.
And it's quite amazing, because it's a really, really good song. But as you said earlier, certainly in the UK, it didn't make any inroads at all.
Clearly, this is the song they were aiming for having a hit.
Mm, definitely.
And the more I listen to it, the more I think, you know, that I think they deserved it. And I, you know, I'm not sure why it didn't catch. I mean, I in those days, I understand why it would be hard for a band with not a lot of reach to make it, say, to North America, but I'm guessing because I just watched the video like 2 hours ago, and like, wow, I could be watching, Depeche Mode from 1982, and this sounds just like it. And why wouldn't this have as much of an effect?
Yeah, I don't think there was enough promotion done on the album, at least in the UK. And if they weren't here to actually do any live sets and, PR jobs, then it wouldn't have got the push it needed to get it up there in the chart, particularly at the time when that's when videos were up there, but you still needed to be around to do the press talk and, press a
Of
few
course.
hands and all that sort of stuff to get
And this
you.
was something that famously Telex, they were not interested in doing a lot of
No,
promotional
well,
stuff.
they never played live, as
They
far as I'm
never,
concerned.
is that true that they never played live?
As far as I know, they never actually played live, other than they may have played live perhaps in a studio or something. They didn't play live on Eurovision. They complained about that on the Union's. I think that they didn't mic sync because they had to sing it, but it was pretty recorded.
It's a shame to me that, these guys who I thought had the, creativity and a similar sensibility to someone, say, like maybe the Pet Shop Boys, maybe they weren't quite as like visually artistically inclined, but they could have found an audience touring, and they just chose not to take that route.
Yeah, but then the influences from Telex is still there in that you've got the Detroit techno scene picked up on as much as they picked up on Kraftwerk
Absolutely.
and the British New Romantics and so on, the synthesizer bands, synthpop bands. But Telex were one of those. Definitely Rock Around the Clock they picked up on when it first came out. So they weren't a band that was not known. They just didn't want to play the game, of constantly touring an album and doing press the flesh with everybody. They just
They couldn't be Queen.
no.
Well, since we're doing this and I've made a thing about this, I'm gonna go ahead and read the lyrics.
Go
And
ahead.
do you read the lyrics for the next one?
Oh, no.
haven't we met somewhere before? Haven't we met somewhere before? Stop me if you've heard that before. And if, well, this says 42, but that's not right. He says
No, it's
62.
not. No, it's in 42.
Is it? I thought he said 62.
No, according to this, to what I've read, it's in 42. The next one is 52.
Okay, I'll read it. I'll read it as that, but I thought he said 60. And 42, you had a flat and asked for help. I got a pump and got your name. I fixed the thing. You offered to pay me, but I refused. We settled for a dinner, or am I confused? One, two, three times, yeah, I'm gonna ask, aren't we lovers? In 52, we had Sue. She loved us. All your friends thought she looked more like you. I'd give her candy. I spoiled her. Her teeth fall out, is what you'd say. One, two, three times. Yeah, I'm gonna ask. Aren't we married? Don't you remember? I think I do. Don't you remember? I'm sure I do. Don't you know me? Ain't seen me before? Or was that you in a film that I saw? Haven't we met somewhere before? Stop me if you've heard that before. Don't you remember? I'm going to skip past that because I've said it before. I guess my facts are all wrong. There never was you. There never was you. Wait, you say? You now think you know me from the past. But now I'm really convinced I don't know you. And if I were asked, I'd have to tell you, dear, no, we're not lovers. I don't remember. You're mistaken. I can't remember. You're mistaken. I don't know you. Ain't seen you before. Or was that me in a film you saw? Haven't we met somewhere before? Stop me if you've heard that before.
Thank you. such an intriguing song.
It's intriguing, and I'm like wondering for a moment, and I do this every time I record these episodes where I read all the lyrics at once where I never have before, and I'm like, is there like a sci-fi element to this?
I think you find yourself getting yet another interpretation of it, isn't
well,
it?
Well, that's for sure.
I mean, the first thing that I was thinking of was it sounds a bit like Here Comes Bob. It's that sort of somebody's slinging a line.
Okay, yeah, Here Comes
but
Bob.
In this case, not crashing into them together.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, well, you know, I started off, you know, listening to this song, and I just figure it's an awkward guy at a singles bar hitting on a lady, and he delivers a line, and then he delivers a sort of self-deprecating and also sort of self-acknowledging line about what he's trying to do. But then it gets into the rest of this story about in 42 and 52, and at that point I'm wondering, well, is there some sort of a sci-fi story here that I'm not privy to, or is he referencing some other literary thing that I'm not privy to?
Yeah, I'm you could be right about this 62, because I'm trying to remember.
I swear it sounds like he's saying that, but
yeah. But I mean, it makes sense that it's in 42. He you know, she has a flat. That's how they meet in 52. Apparently, they have a daughter.
Now, yeah.
To my mind, this is all a chat up line to the point where he suddenly realizes,
right,
I don't really fancy this guy. And so he's back.
This is during the chat up.
No, you made that up. You're the one that said you know me, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And he's trying to back out of it. It's a bit like Black Sheep stroke light honey, if you've ever heard that song, where he meets a girl in the bar and he thinks she's great until he sees her in the light and goes, oh my God.
What's the song?
And then it's him trying to tell the lady, go and get me a beer. Go and step outside. Go and have a cigarette. You know, go away, sort of thing. We've been nice, you know. It's like that, I think, in some way here. You know, halfway through.
Lyrically, this could not be more Ron Mayall, and it's very Ron Mayall, like in sort of like the Tits era of Ron Mayall songs, which is great. But also, and I hate to divorce this from the music, but it's a great tune.
It's brilliant. It's a spark song to me. It's almost like it could have been a spark single.
I think so. I really,
and
really do.
There is so much influence in it, because you know, lyrically, it probably forces the music to work with the lyrics, if that's the case.
So this is again, and I don't know if I'll ever get a straight answer to this. If there was a back and forth between Ron and Russell and the Telex guys.
Yeah.
About how the music was going to go, my current understanding is that the music was composed, but it does feel like a spark song, and that may just be you know, sort of kismet that they just happen to be similar spirits.
I'd agree, and the song itself, the way it's pitched, it makes a superb single, and it was really astonishing that people didn't know it here. You know, when I was at some of these concerts, and the guy played it again and again, every concert he was DJ doing a DJ set, he would play that song, and people were astounded. So it's a bit of a shame that it's one of those unknowns, or it's slipped away. People have forgotten it.
Did you watch the video?
I didn't see it the other day, and I honestly sort of deliberately not wanted to you know, go back too far on these things, particularly video. You know, the way that they interpret it, you just don't know whether they're interpreting the lyrics in the right way or anything. What did you think of the video then?
There's a lot of shots of the band members, you know, in close up and medium shots and whatever. And then it cuts away to these shots of like jellyfish. There's a lot of jellyfish in there, which I thought was really fascinating, because if there's one thing you know about jellyfish is they do not reproduce sexually. And this is on an album called Sex.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's anything, you know, anyone really thought about much, but like, I thought that was interesting.
Salutations, all you carbon-based blobs of mostly water. I'm Computer Girl from the song Computer Girl. Christian and John will return with part two of their idle primate chatter in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, it would be most logical to upload into your electrical meat drive the digital rhythms of Christ on a Bike, John Ashdown's musical outfit. Simply set coordinates for christonabike.net on your intelligence machine, and I am confident your primitive mind can take it from there. Cheers.